Jonathan Sigworth is an adventurer. In high school, he identified as an extreme unicyclist. Not making this up. An extreme unicyclist, riding, for example, down long, steep staircases, one after the next, on his unicycle in the winter. He and his friends made their goals the impossible. When he was 19, Jonathan went to northern India to study. One morning, he was late for class, and so he hopped on his bike. He rode down the winding footpath where he usually walked, high in the hills of the Himalayas, the foothills. As he rounded a tight corner, his tires lost grip of the path, and he went careening over the edge, falling down, down, down. He came to rest 70 feet below. He had fallen on his head. Incredibly, Jonathan survived the fall. He crashed close enough to the local hospital that some workers who were on their smoke break saw him. And after an 8-hour taxi ride, he was in surgery in Delhi. His spinal cord was crushed. He was paralyzed. The editors of Job, they really want a happy ending, don't they? Poor Job was the icon of excessive suffering for so many years. But look, look, he got it all back and more. Hooray! God is generous. The end. But oh, dear editors, it's not that simple, is it? Biblical scholars are clear that there are layers of stories woven together in Job. Perhaps some of the editors wanted to numb the pain that was there. Maybe others sought to make sense of the senseless. Still others wondered how we might find God after such loss. I can't blame them. How very human, right? It stretches us to our limit to sit with the inexplicable. What if Job's life is not restored? What if Jonathan never walks? How do we face that which we cannot neatly fix? To begin, we need to retreat back before the gold and the 6,000 camels and the endless offspring. God finally speaks to Job out of the whirlwind. And Job seems to stop, stand still, breathe. His stance changes. He seems to open himself to God beyond the trauma. This does not diminish the anger, but he receives God and God's presence in a new way. Before, he had only heard, but now he sees with his eye. More than sight, this idiom carried the weighty meaning of a profound personal experience with the holy. God is closer than he had ever imagined. Job names his transformation. I recant and relent, for I am but dust and ashes. It's as if, in meeting this divine whirlwind, he claims peace with his past. He lets go of trying to clear his name with legal speeches. He stops railing against God, though his anger is completely justified. Perhaps he finally understands that it wasn't punishment, that it didn't make sense. And that even there, sitting in that heap of dust and ashes, God is present. Job begins to settle into his mortal, finite being, remembering that he is dust, and that to dust he shall return. There he sees God. We find Bartimaeus in the dust too. Being blind, he supported himself by begging, sitting in the dust as people passed by on the road. Hearing that Jesus is coming, he begins to call out with startling clarity. He understands who Jesus is better than some of the disciples. And he keeps calling to Jesus despite the crowd's best effort to push him back and keep him down. Ignoring the crowd, Jesus responds, and at his call, both Bartimaeus and the community are changed. The crowd listens too and begins to encourage the very one they had scorned. Take heart, he's calling you. Take heart, get up. And Bartimaeus does. He springs up, he throws off his cloak, he comes to meet the teacher. And here, this is the transformation. He still can't see. He doesn't know if he will, but he seeks, he is called, and he responds by leaping into action. Bartimaeus, the one who had been in the dust, not yet healed, but already coming, leaving behind what is perhaps his only valuable possession, ready to follow. In showing up with blessing in the midst of ashes, God offers not just healing or restoration, but wholeness. God guides us into integrity, that is, an integrated life, one that is whole, a whole life that holds our pain together with our joy, our anger, with our gratitude. This morning, we hear Jesus tell Bartimaeus that his faith has made him well. But this can also be translated as whole, that his faith has made him whole. Bartimaeus does not forget what it was like to live out on the margins, but he follows into new life. And Job does not forget the pain of all he has lost, but maybe he finds wholeness. This rings true to me. More than new gold or camels or miraculous healings, this is the blessing that I have seen. I have to say, friends, it is a peculiar juxtaposition, studying the final chapter of Job while nursing my son, Sam. He is a gift unto himself, and he does not replace his brother. The joy that Sam brings is massive, and his presence does not erase the pain of burying our son Fritz. But a little further down this road now, I see the ways in which being present in the dust and ashes, God leads us into wholeness. It is in calling to the holy right there from the dust that we can begin to hold the whole of our lives together. As I live this reality, as I watch new life spring up like Bartimaeus in friends and neighbors and in this, the gathered body, the truest response I know is one of gratitude. Even in the dust and ashes, even when we don't walk again. At funerals, our tradition is to sing the Kentakion, an ancient hymn that proclaims that even at the grave, we make our song, Alleluia, Alleluia, Alleluia. We see Job and Bartimaeus living this out. They embrace God even in the dust and ashes. They're brought into new life, yes. But they call to God, they respond to God, while that life remains a distant improbability. And so we summon the courage also, taking heart enough to say thank you, to say alleluia, even then, even now. The response of deep gratitude reverberates through Jonathan Sigworth's life. But he doesn't walk. He doesn't. Since his accident, he's spent countless hours in rehab. And little by little, he's gained more independence with his wheelchair. And he's learned new tricks. And as he's figured things out, he's come to see how many people lack the resources and training that have helped him to create what is for him a new normal. And so, in gratitude for what he has received, Jonathan has been moved to profound generosity. But generosity is no longer simple for Jonathan. He can't just sign up for the Peace Corps or coach Little League or easily go and help clean up a local park. His generosity requires creativity. In order to respond to his gratitude, he has had to reorder his life. It's been about a decade now since his accident. And he's returned many times to India, and now he lives in New Delhi. He's teaching others with spinal cord injuries how to gain independence. He's brought a new sport to India as part of this quest, wheelchair rugby. He has not lost his adventurous spirit. And he's telling his story that we may learn this way of gratitude as well. I wonder if Job's editors might say that Jonathan's prayers have not been answered. I wonder. And yet, in seeing him, in hearing him speak of his work, there is no question that he is grounded in the holy, that he has heard this call and sprung up to answer it. Perhaps not all of us will walk again, Jonathan says. But that's okay, he continues, because our goal is something more than walking. It's living, forgiving, and loving more deeply than we ever did before. What would it look like to reorder our lives that we might fully spring up in gratitude? Go, Jesus says, your faith has made you whole.